It is Sunday, June 16th, 2013, and this is episode 22 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell, and as usual, the thoughts and opinions I express in this podcast do not reflect those of my employer. Well, first off, I want to say happy Father's Day to all you dads out there, and especially happy Father's Day to my dad. The first thing I wanted to mention on tonight's show is that when you run a podcast like this and post things to the website frequently, obviously that stuff gets indexed by Google and other search engines, and that drives traffic to your site, and everybody likes that. That's a good thing. So a couple of weeks ago, I was down in Disney World, and I was trying to access my site, and I was pretty frustrated because the web filtering software being used by the Wi-Fi in Disney's hotels was classifying defensivesecurity.org as pornography. So, like any good IT person, I just fired up my VPN and routed around the problem and proceeded to post a blog post on my website about being blocked. And the title of the post was something dumb like, defensivesecurity.org is pornography if you're at the Magic Kingdom or something like that. Anyway, Google picked that up, obviously, and now I get a disturbing number of hits from people searching for Disney porn. Now, I'm as familiar with Rule 34 as the next guy. I didn't really think it was that ingrained in the internet, but obviously I was wrong. And it's pretty frightening. The other thing that's interesting when I look at my logs is I have my podcast up on Beyond Pod, which is a kind of like an iTunes-like site for podcasts. And whenever you search for security-related shows, it presents a listing of matching podcasts. And I guess, fortunately, mine is up there in the results, but interestingly, the result page actually pulls the image from your site. So whenever someone searches Beyond Pod for the word security, I get to see it because I see someone trying to download my icon. And what I've noticed is there are a ton of people searching for the Security Now podcast. Now, I will admit, I really haven't paid a lot of attention to Steve Gibson and that podcast, primarily because he is on the charlatans page of attrition.org. And I suppose if I don't behave well, I could end up there too. But I had never really listened to his podcast, but I actually gave it a listen. And there's some interesting things there. He clearly has some interesting perspectives on things. So if you're in the mood, give it a listen. You might like it. In other podcast news, the Risk Hose podcast apparently is no more. And I guess that's the bad news. The good news is that the same crew is back with a new podcast called the Risk Science Podcast. And I think they have now produced two episodes. And I think that's a really good thing. I definitely encourage everyone to go listen to those back episodes. That series started off a long time ago, and I think it originally was called the Sierra Podcast, and then it turned into the Risk Hose Podcast, and now it's the Risk Science Podcast. All of the episodes are worth listening to. They're, in my view, not entirely topical on current events. They tend to be more about risk management as a concept. So I would say they're not outdated, so they're definitely worth going back and listening to. There's a lot of really valuable stuff there. And I also found another podcast called The Forensic Forecast. I haven't made it all the way through one episode yet. They're pretty long, about an hour and a half, but so far seems pretty interesting if you are into forensics. And I will include a link to both the Risk Science podcast and The Forensic Forecast in the show notes. Okay, so the first story I want to talk about tonight is from Network World. The title is Gartner Reveals the Top 10 IT Security Myths. This one actually saw quite a bit of debate on a mailing list I'm on, so I thought it worthwhile to talk about here. The first myth is, it won't happen to me. Basically, this is management of an organization feeling overconfident that the risks of IT security problems are overblown and don't really need to be properly addressed. I think that this myth is really becoming kind of a thing of the past. There's hardly a day that goes by these days where mainstream business publications are not publishing some really scary FUD piece about IT security horror stories. Myth number two, InfoSec budgets are 10% of IT spend. And Gartner's point there is that their research shows security budgets are generally closer to 5% of IT spend. Myth number three, security risks can be quantified. This was one of the areas that created a lot of consternation. And, you know, I'll just read the sub-points. So under cause, they basically say, it's not reasonable to think that you can populate a spreadsheet with numbers that justifies your spending and expect it to be funded based on that, because basically it becomes a situation where whoever has the biggest numbers in their spreadsheet wins. And their listed cure is to develop non-numeric expressions of risk and seek to ensure business unit takes ownership of its IT-related risks. I think this shows an immaturity in the area of security. What we have here is a very highly respected IT analyst house essentially saying that you can't quantify your risks. Instead, you really need to come up with parables that you can sell to your organization. So let's not try to quantify what our loss would be if we don't spend X amount of money on a new firewall package. Let's instead try to come up with a horror story that we can tell around the campfire where the company loses all of its data and use that for justifying the expense you're trying to make. And I guess at that point, the management of the company needs to take in all of the different parables and stories and then compare that with, let's say, the numbers coming out of sales and product management and engineering, which are generally more objective and have things expressed in quantitative values, and try to make some kind of value assessment to say, you know, it makes sense to starve off this new product offering so we can instead go off and address this security parable we just heard about. Measuring IT risk is very, 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 very hard. And I'm not going to say that I've actually done it very well, but it can be done and it should be done. I think if we were to fast forward 10 years, this discussion is going to be really laughable, because there is going to be an expectation that across the business, everybody is going to be justifying their investments quantitatively, including security. And I would also say that if you are able to do this quantitatively, you do get a seat at the big boy table with the executives, and you probably have a chance in hell of getting the investment dollars that you're asking for, rather than the hand-wringing that seems to pervade our industry. All right, enough beating up on that one. Myth number four, we have physical security or SSL, so you know your data is safe. And their point is, by saying that, you're clearly enumerating to everyone that you really don't understand risk. And I could not agree with that one more. Myth number five, password expiration and complexity reduce risk. And I partly agree with this. Their sub-bullet here is that we know passwords are deeply flawed, but cracking is just not the major failure mode. Passwords are not cracked, they're sniffed. I guess what's missing there is the context for which that statement is said, because I don't think that's necessarily true, at least as a rule. It's certainly true in different contexts. Were the passwords from LinkedIn sniffed? No, they were stolen from a database and then cracked. Were the passwords from Evernote sniffed? No, they were stolen from a database and cracked. When you have some complicated APT problem on your network and they have access to a system, what are they doing? Are they sniffing? Well, they might be, but they're getting hashes. What are they doing with those hashes? That's right, they're cracking them. So I'm not writing off sniffing completely. I'm just saying that it's a lot more complicated than that. And I do think that password complexity and password expiration have an important place, and brushing them aside as if they don't really matter is counterproductive, because they do matter. They're just not the only things to think about. Myth number six, moving the CISO outside of IT will automatically ensure good security. I think this one is relatively self-evident, but I would caution that there is a lot of value in moving the CISO out of IT. I think the point here is that if you take a dysfunctional security group and move it outside of IT, that doesn't automatically make it functional, right? If there is something systemically wrong with your security group, just passing the buck to a different department isn't going to fix those structural problems. And I definitely agree with that. However, I think there is some important separation issues that need to be addressed. And the example I'll use is that if you look at the average public company who has an internal audit department, the internal audit department doesn't report to the COO. They report to the audit committee of the board, usually. And they do that for independence reasons. There can be organizational priority conflict if the CISO reports to the CIO, and that can be a dangerous thing. I also think that having it separate creates its own problems, because quite often IT and security need to work very closely. They are kind of two sides of the same coin in a lot of respects. All right, myth number seven, adhering to security practices is the CISO's problem. You know, this is the age-old problem of, if it were that insecure, you wouldn't let us do it. If I shouldn't click on the link, you should prevent me from doing that. if I do something dangerous, you ought to implement technology that'll mitigate the risk. And the reality is the world doesn't work like that. Security really has to become part of the culture of an organization for it to be effective. Myth number 8 is buy this tool and it will solve all your problems. I don't think I need to spend much time talking about that one. Blinky lights don't solve a whole lot. They just cost a lot of money. You really need to think about what you need in your given situation. That's why we earn the big bucks. Myth number 9, let's get the policy in place and we are good to go. I have seen this happen a lot, actually. I've, in my day, implemented a lot of policy, and writing the policy is quite often the most simple part. The really hard part comes in changing organizational behavior to comply with that policy, and that can be extremely difficult depending on the size of your organization and how radically different the policy is from current operations. But definitely my advice there is to really think through how that process or policy is going to be implemented and enforced, because that's at least as important as the policy itself. If people aren't aware of the policy, if people aren't going to be held to the policy, you really don't have a policy. And number 10, encryption is the best way to keep your sensitive files safe. And their point here is that done wrongly, encryption can actually be more dangerous than not encrypting, because it'll either lead to a false sense of security, or you'll lose the keys and you'll lose your data forever, or the encryption isn't as strong as you thought it was and the data gets stolen anyway, or any number of other nightmare scenarios. As with everything else, encryption needs to be implemented appropriately. Again, that's why we get paid the big bucks. All right, the next story is that OWASP has released its 2013 top 10 list, and it looks very similar to the 2012 list. It's really, really disheartening to keep seeing the same things on the report over and over and over and over again. Injection is number one, and that should not be any surprise. We see this being attacked in spades, especially by hacktivists dumping databases, and presumably this is how most of the major passwords database thefts have happened and whatnot. Broken authentication and session management is number 2. Cross-site scripting is number 3. I think it's interesting that cross-site scripting is number 3 on the OWASP top 10. I can remember back in the 90s having discussions with web developers who pushed off cross-site scripting vulnerabilities as trivial and uninteresting and really of no consequence, and now it's number 3. Number 4, insecure direct object references. I see this all too often. There's still quite a number of examples, especially if you look through Datalos DB, you see this one come up quite a bit, where some application has been written which allows unauthenticated access to a record. There was a case down in Australia where I think it was Superannuation who ended up threatening the person who reported it with jail, and anyway, that I think all ended up getting resolved, but that was a case of direct object reference. And also the thing that sent Aaron Arnheimer to prison with AT&T was another example, and that was that's fairly a long time ago now, and still we see it at the top of the list. I think it's beneficial to go over this list with the development teams and maybe put it into some kind of a secure development practices education program. It's really important, and maybe your department or your organization is already doing this sort of thing, and if so, that's great. But for those that aren't, this is becoming very important. Attackers are really figuring out how to exploit these vulnerabilities. They know they're there. They're becoming very sophisticated. The tools to exploit these things are becoming more sophisticated. And, you know, we just keep seeing it out in the world. So it really, in my view, is something as a security group, if we're not doing, we need to take this bull by the horns and do something with it. Okay, the next story is about federal regulators finding security risks in medical devices. And this article is from Network World. And basically, the FDA has done some assessments on security, on medical devices. And what they found is that in hospital settings, for example, they're finding badly configured medical devices. They're finding systems that have been disabled by malware. And it's pretty troubling. Now, thinking back, Barnaby Jack has been picking on medical devices for quite some time now. I can't help but think that this might have been some of what put the FDA onto looking at these things. But it is pretty troublesome. The assertion here is that the attackers are after Social Security numbers and other confidential information that will help them commit fraud, not necessarily intending to attack the devices themselves, but rather go after some of the data they get. But what the net is that some of this malware has obviously unintended consequences. And the other thing that it shows is just the vulnerable state of affairs, and if some bad person wanted to go and really do some damage at a hospital, it shows that it's possible. And this could have significant consequences on people's lives. It's really not a joke. The FDA found, apparently, lots of bad password practices, passwords disabled, default passwords still in place. And if you think about, especially in a hospital setting, it's not all that difficult to imagine people turning off passwords because, you know, at the end of the day, they are there doing a job and that stuff is kind of getting in the way of doing their job quickly. You have people working very long shifts. We know people start making bad decisions when they've been on the job for a long time. And what do we know about people in hospitals? They work very, very long hours. So I'm not terribly surprised to see bad password practices. What that says to me is that there needs to be a better way, you know, whether that's smart cards or, God forbid, biometrics or something else that is easy to use and fast. And obviously also secure. I do not envy security people who are looking over hospitals. This is a gotta be a really, really tough job. So some interesting things have come out of the FDA's work here. They have apparently issued some guidelines for device manufacturers to try to get them to improve their security. One of the things they announced with this is that, and by the way, I'm a little on the fence about this one. I think there's pros and cons, that software updates to address security concerns don't have to be reviewed and approved by the FDA like other software updates would have to be. And my concern would be, you know, it's not impossible to think that people might take liberty with what constitutes a security update. However, I think it would definitely be a net positive to have these device manufacturers paying better attention to the security of their devices. And that's certainly going to continue to grow in importance as more and more of these devices become network connected and software driven rather than more embedded type hardware. All right, next story from InfoWorld. Oracle is about to ship 40 new security fixes to Java, 37 of which are remotely exploitable. Yeehaw. Patch away all. But, you know, given the story that I had last week, it doesn't seem likely that most people are actually going to patch. So that's a little depressing for me. And the final story is from Malware Jake. I have mentioned before that I love reading Malware Jake stuff. His blog is awesome, malwarejake.blogspot.com. He does not pay me to say that. He doesn't even know me. So this blog post is in relation to a news report in a German online magazine called Golem, which is interesting. I'm sure that means something in German. That the German intelligence agencies can decrypt PGP. Obviously, the timing is a little interesting, given everything that's happened with Prism and that whole ball of wax. But Jake's take is that the Germans haven't actually found a way to decrypt PGP because that's probably very complicated. The far more likely explanation is that they've targeted the people they're trying to obtain decrypted PGP sessions from with some kind of malware. And he goes on to point out that in the past he has given some training on how to create malware which will access Windows key stores via an API. Now, the one thing that I don't know the answer to, and I'm actually, I think, going to post this question to his blog, is whether PGP keys would actually be accessible through that API. I got the impression that that would be more native Windows key stores. But I am not an expert there, and I don't really know for sure. But the net point is, I think he's probably right on. It's far more easy to plant a Trojan on someone's system and sniff out the key or grab the key via an API or some other means than it would be to hire an army of absolutely brilliant mathematicians and or create the world's most elaborate brute-forcing hardware. One thing Jake does give some advice about is to disable private key exports. And apparently you can do that by checking a box when you import your private keys. There's a place to mark them as non-exportable. And of course, probably the most important thing is to make sure you don't allow malware on your system in the first place. Although I will tell you, if your adversary is your local law enforcement or state law enforcement or federal law enforcement, wherever country you are in, you probably are fighting a losing battle. And you may want to fall back and refactor your plans or your chosen career path. Oh, there is one more thing. This past weekend was B-Sides Rhode Island, and Iron Geek has posted all of the videos from that conference on his website, and I haven't made it all the way through them all. I've watched about five so far. Each one is roughly an hour, so it's quite a time investment, and I've probably got, I have no idea how many to go. They are excellent. Obviously, it's a very small conference. But if you can only watch one, go and watch Rob Graham's video on the freaky economics of cybersecurity. I have the link to Iron Geek's website where he's got those videos posted. You can find links to all the individual presentations there. Again, Rob Graham's video on the economics of cybersecurity. It's really, really good. Well, that's all I have time for tonight. I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to talking to you again next week. In the meantime, if you have any comments, questions, ideas, feedback, stories that you'd like to hear me talk about, things that you'd rather I not talk about, or anything in the middle, give me an email, info@defensivesecurity.org. You can send me a tweet @defensivesec. You can visit the website at www.defensivesecurity.org. You can find show notes with all of the links of the stories I talk about and a whole bunch of other cool stuff on that site. Anyhow, have a great Father's Day to all those dads again, and I look forward to talking to you again next week. Take care. Bye.